The U.S. Supreme Court began its new term yesterday, and some of the cases on the docket include affirmative action in college admissions, voting rights, and gay marriage. We'll talk about the significance of these issues this hour, as well as the politics surrounding the court and the justices. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, October 2nd. What did the Supreme Court decide to hear and what did it reject? We'll talk about that first, and we will wonder if you are hopeful or fearful of what the High Court might decide. And we welcome your questions for our guest as well at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Amy Howe, editor of the U.S. Supreme Court blog, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. So first, can you sum up what the court will be taking up?
Sure. The court had heard its first oral arguments yesterday, and so one of the big cases was actually argued yesterday. It's a case called Kiobel versus Royal Dutch Petroleum. It's a high-profile case about whether businesses can be sued for human rights abuses that occur overseas. And then they have another big case on their docket next Wednesday, which is a case called Fisher versus University of Texas at Austin. And that's a challenge to the university's use of race in its admissions policies. And so those are the two cases that are some of the really high-profile cases that are already on its docket. But we expected the term to get a lot more exciting, because it seems very likely that they will have cases involving same-sex marriage, the constitutionality of the Voting Rights Act, and a case involving, you know, whether or not police can take DNA from arrestees to use in investigating crimes, on its docket before the term is over at the end of June next year.
Wow, lots of stuff. Are there some issues that they decided not to tackle?
They decided to not to tackle a whole host of issues yesterday. They had not taken on a lot of new cases since they took their summer recess, and so there were a whole bunch of cases that had built up, and so they, you know, declined to review a couple of different challenges involving voting in Washington State and Minnesota and Maine, and all kinds of cases that really were hundreds that were denied.
But they are expected to take up something that has to do with voter ID?
That seems very likely. It's still sort of working its way up. They've got the Texas voter ID law. The lower courts held that Texas could not use its voter ID law, and the Texas Attorney General has promised to go to the Supreme Court and seek review. And so that seems very likely to be headed to the court. The question is just when.
So how significant is this particular case? Would this be this Texas case? Is this something that, you know, Wisconsin has a voter ID law going through our state courts?
Sure. There are a couple of different challenges to voter ID laws. Back in 2008, in a case called Crawford, the court held that Indiana could use a voter ID law. This is coming up out of Texas, though, which has a history of discrimination in voting. And so the lower court there, in holding that Texas couldn't use its voter ID law, said the question is not whether, you know, in the abstract, there's a right to have a voter ID law, but whether or not in Texas it's going to discriminate against minority voters. And so it may not be a broad ruling that, you know, you can never have a voter ID law.
Talk some about it. While they haven't actually put a case on the docket, when it comes to same-sex marriage, what are some of the cases that they might look at?
There were two different sets of same-sex marriage cases, and so one that is almost certainly going to be on the docket involves the constitutionality of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. This is a law that was passed back in 1996 and signed by then-President Bill Clinton that defined marriage for purposes of a whole host of federal laws and federal programs as being between a man and a woman. And so this case is not about whether or not there's a right to same-sex marriage, because the plaintiffs in these cases are already married under state law. The question is whether or not this law unconstitutionally discriminates against them by limiting marriage to a man and a woman. And so there's one case, for example, called Windsor versus United States. It was brought by an 83-year-old woman who'd been with her same-sex partner for 42 years before her partner died, and they were married in Canada, living in New York State. Her partner left her her entire estate, and so this woman, Edith Windsor, now faces almost $400,000 in estate taxes that she says she wouldn't have had to pay if she'd been married to a man. And so another lower court, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the First Circuit, which sits in Boston, has held that the Federal Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional. And when that happens, when a lower court says that a federal statute is unconstitutional, the Supreme Court has a near-perfect record of reviewing it. And so even Justice Ginsburg, in some remarks last week or 2 weeks ago in a public speaking engagement, said that she expected the issue to come to the court before the end of the term. The question is really just, when exactly is that going to happen and in what cases? The other interesting thing about that set of cases is that the Obama administration has actually declined to defend the constitutionality of the statute. So the federal government's not defending the federal statute. Instead, it's being defended by a group of House Republican leaders. So that's one set of cases. The other set of cases is the challenge to California's Proposition 8, which is California's prohibition on same-sex marriage. That case started out in the district court, and the challengers to that law got a fairly broad ruling about a right to same-sex marriage. But the intermediate appellate court, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, really narrowed the ruling quite a bit. And so it still seems likely that the question is going to come to the Supreme Court, but there's a lot more uncertainty about whether or not the court will do it.
Yeah, still a lot at stake there. What about this college affirmative action case? I thought the high court already ruled on whether it was constitutional to consider race in college admissions.
Exactly. Back in 2003, there was a challenge to the University of Michigan Law School's use of race in its admissions policies. Prior to that decision, the University of Texas had used what was called the top 10% plan. It didn't look at race at all in its admissions. It said if you are in the top 10% of your class in Texas, you are automatically are admitted to the University of Texas for the undergraduate college. And that achieved a fairly diverse student body. But then after the court's decision in this 2003 case called Grutter versus Bollinger, the University of Texas decided to start using race as one factor in filling the leftover spots that weren't filled through this top 10% plan. And so a white student from Texas named Abigail Fisher was not admitted to the University of Texas. She filed a lawsuit alleging that she hadn't been admitted when minority students who had less impressive qualifications than hers had been. And so therefore the university's use of race violated the Constitution. It discriminated against her. The lower courts ruled against her, and she filed a petition asking the Supreme Court to take up the case. She said, look, you know, this is not consistent with your decision in the Grutter case 9 years ago because Texas already has a diverse student body. They don't need to consider race to fill the remaining slots. But then she took a second step, and she said, even if this policy passes muster under the court's decision in Grutter, you should overrule Grutter. And so the court does not overrule, you know, its precedents lightly, but in the 9 years since the court issued its decision in Grutter, the author of the opinion in that case, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, has been replaced by Samuel Alito, who is considerably more conservative than Justice O'Connor was on issues of race. And so people are watching this case very closely. It seems, you know, at the point that the court decided to review the case, it seemed like there was a good chance that, you know, at a minimum, the University of Texas's policy could be held unconstitutional. And the real question is whether or not the court might go further and strike down affirmative action more broadly.
Well, we'll talk more about what's expected in some of these cases and what court watchers our thinking with Amy Howe, editor of the U.S. Supreme Court blog, talking about the Supreme Court kicking off its newest term this week and what issues are at stake. We'll talk more about the politics of the court as well in just a few minutes. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is our Fall Pledge Drive on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now taking a few minutes to ask for your support of the programs you enjoy. Rob Ferret is with me, and we are asking you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to make a gift in support of the programs you value.
Last hour, our goal was 20 pledges, and we heard from 26 listeners. Thank you so much for those pledges. Our goal this hour is 35 pledges, 35 pledges by 8 o'clock. Help us meet that goal by making your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, thanks to your gift.
You share every weekday morning with this program, or most of them, I hope. Maybe your alarm clock wakes you up to it. Maybe you share breakfast in the kitchen or your drive to work. Your morning wouldn't be the same without this program and with all of the great guests that you hear. Pledge your support for these morning conversations at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. Tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. Consider using your credit card. It saves time, postage, and paper, and puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, take those 2 minutes right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, Rob, I mentioned that last hour I made my first pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm happy that I'm going to be picking up a copy of the Wisconsin Local Foods Journal with that first pledge of the drive. Now I'm issuing my next pledge of the drive. It's
another
a challenge.
One?
It's a challenge. And what this means is it's my new member challenge. For every new member that calls in and pledges during this hour, to be a new member, it means you haven't pledged before. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's been a long time since you've made a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. For every new member that makes a pledge this hour, I'm going to pony up $10. Now, that may not sound
That's
like
risky.
A lot for one, but if we get 10 or 20 or 30, it's going to start adding up. And I'm hoping that as many listeners as possible make that very first-time pledge during this hour, because I want to. I want to make that pledge. So make your pledge of any amount, and I will add $10 to it if you are a first-time pledger. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, I think that's a great challenge, Joy. The most exciting part of Pledge Drives to me is seeing those new members coming in, people saying, you know what, maybe I haven't thought about it before. I've been listening for months, maybe years. When they're saying listener supported, they're talking about me. They're talking about me making that pledge. Well, we're talking about you right now. Make that first ever pledge. Take Joy Cardine up on her new member challenge with a pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So far, I'm getting off easy because we don't have any new members who have called in so far this hour, but I know that will change, and I hope it will change. And even if you're not a new member, we would love to hear from you. We need to make a goal of 35 pledges during this hour in order to stay on track, in order to raise the amount in listener support that we need to pay for the programming. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When we ask for your support, we're talking to you. Yes, you. Don't look over your shoulder. Don't look at your neighbor or your friend or your coworker. You're listening right now. You value this program. You rely on it being here for you. You count on us, and we're counting on you. Listener support is what makes this program possible. You're a listener. Make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, Scott Simon from NPR News here. You know, many listeners now choose to support public radio as monthly sustainers. Just pay a small amount each month on your credit card for as long as you like. Kind of how you pay for a lot of services these days, cable TV, your health club, except that you get public radio everywhere, in your home, car, office, now even on your mobile devices. So please become a monthly sustainer. The amount's up to you, $10 a month, $15 a month. It's really a great way to support your listening without taking a huge bite out of your monthly budget. Here's how to sign up.
You can go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Rob Ferret, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Make that gift in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your radio station, the one that wakes you up in the morning, rides with you on your commute, and offers great companionship during the day.
The beauty of public radio is that you get to decide how much you'd like to pay for the programs you enjoy. Many first-time donors give $25 or $60. Your gift, combined with those other gifts from loyal Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, add up to what we need to make Wisconsin Public Radio great. Become the next new member right now. And cost me a little bit of money because I am chipping in $10 for every new member who calls in this hour or goes to WPR.org or calls 888-202-2552.
You've made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make the decision to support WPR financially. It's just that simple. And pledging is simple, too, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Here are some questions to think about when deciding to donate to Wisconsin Public Radio. What is Wisconsin Public Radio worth to you? How much do you listen to public radio over the course of a week, a month, or even a year? How much do you pay a month for things like cable TV or for movies or for magazine subscriptions? At WPR, you get to choose how much you give. Any contribution makes you a member at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking for 33 more pledges this hour? Remember, oh, there's our first new member. Thank you for that pledge.
Oh, $10.
That's $10 for Joy. Mm-hmm. Each new member, you've never pledged before, you pledge now, Joy's going to tack 10 more bucks on. Well, let's see. It could cost Joy a lot. Maybe just a little if nobody pledges. I don't know.
That's right. Sometimes I get off easy. Most times I'm dishing out.
Just doubled it.
Oh, there we
two
go.
New
see,
pledges.
That's what happens. And I'm happy to do it because I want to encourage you to make that contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio and to become that first-time pledger. It's an investment of sort, and you really feel good when you make that first pledge. And you're part owner of this station and this service with your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Three new pledges now. Thank you so much. WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge.
Thanks very much, Rob. We'll talk to you later. We continue now as we discuss the Supreme Court and its new term. And we talk about the various high-profile issues that the High Court is considering or is expected to take up. And we welcome your questions and your views for our Supreme Court watcher. We're talking about those cases and the politics surrounding the justices and the court. Our on-air call-in number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Amy Howe is our guest. She is editor of the U.S. Supreme Court blog. We talked about some of the cases that the Supreme Court will take up, and I'm wondering, Amy Howe, whether or not you mentioned that there are some who are already predicting how some of these cases might be ruled on by the court. Is the court predictable when it comes to the cases and whether they will strike something down or not?
Well, you know, to a certain extent, we like to think that we know how the justices might vote, but certainly the decision in health care last year when we had the Chief Justice joining the four more liberal justices for maybe only the second time in his years on the court to form a majority to uphold the individual mandate on the ground that it was a tax was, you know, a surprise to pretty much everyone everywhere. So, you know, we like to think that we have a pretty good idea, and certainly, you know, we think that the Chief Justice may well be skeptical in the affirmative action case, for example, a couple of years ago in a case involving public school registration that was based in part on race. He wrote a sentence that's now become famous. He said something along the lines of, the way to stop discriminating on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race. And so from that, we can guess that he might well be skeptical of the university's defense in the affirmative action case. But, you know, as the, again, as the healthcare decision shows, you never know for sure until you get a decision.
Yeah, I did see one court watcher predicted that it's time to kiss affirmative action goodbye. Could it go that far?
It could. You know, that's certainly up before the court. The question is whether they, you know, could go for the smaller decision and say, well, this use of race is unconstitutional because Texas already had a diverse student body without having to consider race, or whether or not they'll take the big swing at the pinata and get rid of affirmative action altogether.
Talk a little bit more about Justice Roberts, since his vote to uphold the big healthcare law over the summer. Has his role changed on the court now?
I don't know that his role has changed on the court. I mean, certainly, perhaps to the extent that the more conservative justices might have, let me backtrack for a second. You know, in closely divided cases, and everyone thought that healthcare was going to be a closely divided case, people who watched the court closely tended to think of Justice Anthony Kennedy as the swing vote in these cases. You know, depending on whether he decided to vote with the conservative justices or the liberal justices, there goes the case. And so perhaps after the healthcare decision, you know, we now think of the Chief Justice perhaps as a little bit more of a swing vote, and maybe the more conservative justices now realize that you can't take him for granted, that his vote may well be up for grabs. But, you know, it's only been one term. That was one decision, and the SB 1070 case, the Arizona decision, was another case in which he joined with Justice Kennedy and three of the more liberal justices to void most of Arizona's controversial immigration law. I think it's too soon to say that, you know, he's done some sort of ideological 180 and is now going to be a moderate, but certainly we can be watching his vote and his questions at oral argument closely over the next couple of terms to see what the Roberts Court is really going to look like.
Do the conservative justices distrust him now?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, because the court in many ways is such an opaque institution. I mean, we know what we saw. We saw him deliver this decision upholding the individual mandate. There were the reports after the oral argument that he had changed sides, but you know, those were anonymous sources, and so we don't really know what's going on inside the court.
We're going to talk more about the politics of the U.S. Supreme Court after we check news. Talking with Amy Howe, editor of the U.S. Supreme Court blog. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with Rob Ferret, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. We're here today to raise the money we need to pay for the programs that you enjoy, programs like this one. That's how Wisconsin Public Radio works. The people who use it help pay for it. So please go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 right now to support the programs you count on.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. To help pay for the programs you depend on. We're now looking for 18 more pledges in the next 25 minutes. And Candace from Whitewater helped get us started this hour. She became a new member today, and she says she did it because she was inspired by Joy's new member challenge.
Yes.
What's that all about, Joy?
Thank you, Candace, for taking part. For every new member who pledges during this hour, I will chip in an extra $10. That means that so far, 13 new members have called in and pledged so far this hour, meaning so far I'm out $130. I'm happy to make that contribution, but if that starts adding up, it's going to add up, you know, quite quickly. Every single new member, I'll chip in a number, $10. And I think in the past, I did a $300 pledge one time because of new members. So I hope I can do that again. WPR.org or 888 202-2552. You become a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Association with your pledge of any amount. And you are a new member if you're making a first-time pledge.
Hey, here's why. You know, maybe you were listening one time and you found yourself thinking about something in a new and different way after hearing one of our shows. Maybe understanding someone else's point of view that you hadn't thought about before. That's the beauty of the Ideas Network. You hear multiple points of view, a lot of different perspectives. Well, you value what you hear on the Ideas Network. Now pledge your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Lots of great comments from listeners this morning. Richard and Pamela from Milwaukee say, I totally enjoy all of the diverse, provocative, informative programs I hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't listen, whether in the car or at home. Thank you. Thank you, Richard and Pamela. Won't you join them with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you pledge, it's easy. We just need your name, contact info, the amount of your pledge, and how you want to pay. Save time and money. Use a credit card if you can, or better yet, this really helps us out a lot. Start an automatic sustaining donation from your bank account. You choose how to give, and then you do it, and you can find out how at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have listeners in Michigan who are pledging to Wisconsin Public Radio. Elizabeth in Spalding says, although I live in Michigan, I get Wisconsin Public Radio out of Sister Bay. I listen to the Ideas Network every day. It's my go-to source for news and information. I can't even count the numbers of times I've said I was listening to Wisconsin Public Radio and dot, dot, dot. And Corey in Auburndale, I love this, Corey. He pledged today because he says, I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio in the barn, in the tractor, and at home.
Great. Thank you so much for your pledge, Corey. Well, where are you listening right now? And why don't you make a pledge from there? WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio because I feel that it's important. Everyone should get involved somehow in learning both or all sides of the story. The only way to do that is with programs such as Joy Cardine, Ben Marins, Kathleen Dunn, and more, to be able to fully educate us on different issues that are not always in other media outlets.
Thank you very much. You can go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support. I'm Joy Cardine with Rob Ferret, and we are asking you to support the programs you count on. Thank you in advance for your gift of $50 or $100 or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about why you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio and specifically to this program. Give yourself a little time to think about it, but not too much time, then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are working toward a goal of 35 pledges during this hour. We have 17 to go and about 17 minutes or so. So won't you help us reach that goal? Won't you help pay for the programs that you count on here at Wisconsin Public Radio? And why don't you take me up on my new member challenge? If you have never pledged before to Wisconsin Public Radio, or maybe it's been a long time, go ahead and make your pledge of any amount, and I'll add an extra $10 into the kitty. I am contributing an extra $10 for every single new member during this hour. It's my new member challenge, and so far, 15 new members.
Up.
So far I'm out $150, and I'm happy to do it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Love to see people taking that first step, making that first contribution, realizing that the listener and listener-supported radio is you. Make that pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Looking for 16 more pledges this hour.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Rob. It sounded like you were choking there for a second, but you're okay. You know, we never mentioned this special thank you gift.
Oh, yeah.
We have a T-shirt, and I understand it's quite cool.
A turquoise T-shirt. When you pledge $120 or more, $10 a year, I think You get a lot of Wisconsin Public Radio.
$10 a month.
$10 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of public radio when you pledge $10 a month, and we'll throw in that T-shirt when you pledge $120 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Just an extra little thank you gift.
Maybe I'll be able to pick up one of those T-shirts with this extra pledge that I'm making during this hour. I think I can. So if you're a new member, call in. If you're a renewing member, call in or go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make your pledge of any amount and help pay for the programming that you love. Thanks very much, Rob. We'll talk to you in a while. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the Supreme Court and the new term of the Supreme Court. It's kicking off its newest term this week, talking about some of the high-profile issues that it is considering. Some of those cases include affirmative action in college admissions. There could be rulings on same-sex marriage cases, also international human rights. We're welcoming your thoughts and questions on what the Supreme Court is taking up and what it's not taking up, and the politics of the Supreme Court as well. Our guest is Amy Howe, who is editor of the U.S. Supreme Court blog. We've talked about some of the cases. We've talked a little bit about the politics of the court. Let's talk a little bit about the Supreme Court has an issue in the presidential race, with the winner having the opportunity to perhaps change the makeup of the court. I'm wondering, Amy Howe, what justices are we likely to see retire in the next 4 years, say?
Sure. Well, the oldest justice on the court is Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's 79, and she is in good health and enjoys her job a lot. She has said that her goal is to serve as long as Justice Louis Brandeis, her idol, who served until he was 82. And so that would put her somewhere around 2014. And so I think that if President Obama were reelected, she would feel a lot of pressure, including, you know, she herself might feel compelled to retire during the next 4 years to ensure that President Obama could name her successor.
Seriously, that's the way it works. A justice that might be considered left or right would retire if a left or right president were in office.
That is not how it has always worked. It is, and certainly, you know, Justice David Souter, who was appointed by the first President Bush, retired during President Obama's first 4 years. But I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg in particular would like to be replaced. And other justices share her views. I think Justice Scalia has said, you know, certainly he would probably prefer to be succeeded by someone appointed by a Republican president. You know, I think that these justices, you know, Justice Ginsburg recognizes that a lot of important cases, you know, may well hang in the balance depending on who the next justice is.
Well, and if Mitt Romney were to win, that would really change the makeup of the court.
If Justice Ginsburg were to retire, whether she chose to retire or she realized she needed to retire during a Mitt Romney administration, that certainly could have a very strong impact on the court. You know, I think that it may well be the case that if Mitt Romney were elected, she could try to hang on and see if a Democrat were elected in 2016. But you're absolutely correct that if she were to retire during a Mitt Romney administration, that it would be a very big change on the court.
Do we have any idea of the type of justice that President Mitt Romney might appoint?
I think you could expect a justice in the mold of the more conservative justices. The President George W. Bush really made putting young conservative judges on the lower federal courts a big priority. And so there are, you know, five or six, you know, judges on the lower federal courts in their mid to late 40s, like Judge Brett Kavanaugh, who's on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, and Stephen Colleton, who's on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, just to name a couple, who could be likely candidates for a Supreme Court nomination in a Romney administration.
Do Supreme Court justices weigh the impact of their rulings, what impact their rulings might have on elections and politics?
Certainly, I think that they don't do so consciously. I think they see themselves as deciding the cases that come before them. And you know, there have been a lot of studies and a lot of scholarship written about whether or not the court tries to sort of hew to public opinion to, you know, sort of temper the impact of its rulings. But, you know, I think they really see themselves as, you know, as deciding the cases that, that come before them.
There was some talk that Chief Justice Roberts was trying hard not to overrule President Obama when it came to the Affordable Care Act.
Well, again, we don't really know exactly what was going on, and we won't know for many years until, you know, a justice retires and releases his or her papers from, you know, the 2011 to 2012 term. You know, he may well have had at sort of the heart of his concern not just what the right decision was legally, but what decision, you know, would be best for the court as an institution, and that might help to explain his vote, certainly.
You know, we talked about a number of the cases that the Supreme Court is or will likely take up this term. We didn't talk a whole lot about the case that was heard yesterday that deals with foreign victims in U.S. courts for human rights violations. Talk about this case.
Sure. This case involves how to interpret a law that was enacted back in 1789 called the Alien Tort Statute that allows non-citizens to bring lawsuits in U.S. courts for serious violations of international law. And so this law was enacted in 1789, and over the next nearly 200 years, I think there were only two cases, you know, in the whole United States that relied on the law. But back in 1980, it was used as the basis for a lawsuit brought by the father of a young Paraguayan man who'd been tortured to death in Paraguay against the man who was also from Paraguay, who was allegedly responsible for his son's death. And that case went forward, and since then it's been the basis for a whole series of lawsuits alleging human rights abuses overseas. And so this case yesterday was a case that was brought by 12 Nigerian citizens against Royal Dutch Petroleum, so three foreign oil companies that had been doing business in Nigeria. And the allegation was that the foreign oil companies had worked with the Nigerian government to get Nigerian security forces to suppress opposition to oil exploration in the region where these Nigerian citizens live. And the court first heard oral argument in this case actually back in late February of this year on the question of whether or not corporations could be sued under this statute at all. And a couple of days after the court heard oral argument, it ordered a new argument, a new set of briefing on whether or not this statute, the Alien Tort Statute, applies at all to conduct that occurs in other countries. There was a lot of concern at the first oral argument and, again, concern at the second oral argument about whether or not the U.S. is an appropriate place to hear these lawsuits brought by foreigners against foreign companies for things that happen in other countries. And the argument by the plaintiffs is that, you know, this, in some cases, you know, like the Nigerian case, there's really nowhere else necessarily for these kinds of lawsuits to go forward. The argument by the corporations is that, you know, what business does this have in U.S. courts? And there was concern that allowing cases like this to proceed in U.S. courts could, in fact, cause foreign relations problems for the United States. And so the justices were really trying to figure out at oral argument yesterday what to do. There was concern that they didn't want the U.S. courts to become a court hearing cases from all over the world, but whether or not some cases should still be allowed to go forward.
And we've talked about the affirmative action in college admissions case. We've talked some about the same-sex marriage cases. We've talked some about the Voting Rights Act that will be likely examined. Anything else of significance that the Supreme Court is taking up this term?
The Supreme Court is going to, almost certain to hear a case from Maryland involving a man who was arrested for one crime, and under a new Maryland law, because he was arrested, the police were allowed to take a swab of his DNA, which then led to his being charged with a separate crime, a rape that had occurred several years before, and it had become a cold case. And so the justices are going to be, you know, considering, you know, under what circumstances can people be required to provide these DNA samples and what can they be used for, which is, I think, something that's going to be a lot of interest to a lot of people. Really raises not just issues related to criminal justice, but also privacy.
Well, it'll be an interesting term to watch. Thank you for watching it for us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Amy Howe, editor of the U.S. Supreme Court blog. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is day one of our fall membership drive. I'm Joy Cardine with Rob Ferret, and we're here today to raise money in support of the programs that you enjoy and that you value that you hear on this station. Please make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking to get five more pledges in the next 5 minutes. Your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed and learned something from our conversation with Amy Howe, the editor of the U.S. Supreme Court blog, talking with us about the significant cases and issues that the High Court will be addressing this term. Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours to come possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just 2 minutes of your time. Just give us your name, your contact info, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. Whether you call or you pledge online, we will keep your personal information safe. We don't share it with other organizations.
Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And if you are a first-time pledger to Wisconsin Public Radio, or if it's been a while since you've made a pledge, you will become a new member to the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. And if you make that call or pledge online now, as a new member, I am chipping in an extra $10 for every new member that pledges this hour. It's my new member challenge. I do this usually once every pledge drive to encourage you to support this program with your dollars. Whatever amount you pledge, I'm fine with that. I'll chip in the $10 for whatever that amount is. 26 new members so far this hour,
Rob. They took you up on it, Joy.
Yeah, so that means $260 so far is coming out of my pocket, but I'm happy to do that. I hope you are too. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, with this new member challenge, Joy is giving you a little added incentive to pledge, but really think about it. Doesn't she give you a great reason to pledge each hour? Think about all the great conversations that Joy has had, all the work that goes into it, all the preparation that she does, her breadth of knowledge, her interest, her love of Wisconsin. You appreciate that. That's why you listen this morning and maybe every morning. Pledge for Joy Cardine. Pledge for great public radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio because my radio is broke and it's the only station I can get. No, it's not true. I think it's probably the purest station in as far as handling both sides of an issue. I listen more to things that I agree with, but there are times when I hear things that I don't agree with, but I think, you know, he's got a point. I'm John Treader, Wisconsin Public Radio. It's my source of entertainment and information, and I really enjoy it, and I'm thankful it's there.
And we're thankful you're there, too. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Rob Ferret. And, Rob, just a minute to go, and we have four pledges to go to make our goal this hour.
You can make your pledge, help us hit this goal, and go over it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. David from Dodgeville pledged. He says, I drive 2 hours a day, and I love all the programs. Keep up the good work. Thank you, David. Linda and Mike from Pulaski say, it's amazing how much we learn during my 20-minute commute to and from work just by tuning in to WPR. Thank you for your pledge. Now, how about you? Make a pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Do it for your love of learning and because you learn something new every day. Do it because you think this is a valuable resource for the state of Wisconsin. And do it because you want me to spend some money on your pledge. This is the new member challenge. This hour, only another just a few seconds to go here. Make your pledge as a new member at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and I'll chip in an extra $10 for each new member. I am out $260 so far. I hope that goes up.
Keep pledging through the news. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.